Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Ryan Hardman, registration number 37922. I represent Jeremiah Houston. The state requested argument in this case specifically to talk about the procedural arguments. So I'll start there, but I hope to not be too distracted from the substantive SVP issues. This is an appeal of the court's 2011 order designating Mr. Houston an SVP. The court was required by statute to make an independent SVP determination. That's what happened, and that's what we are appealing now. Mr. Houston's new plea agreement after his revocation of probation, or in that plea agreement, the prosecution stipulated to there being a new SVP determination or new SVP assessment. And in fact, the prosecution asked the court to correct its oversight in failing to previously make the SVP determination and asked the court to determine whether Mr. Houston was an SVP.
And that was the prosecutor.
Everybody, the prosecutor, yes, and defense counsel were asking the court to determine.
So why would the prosecutor take that position if the parole board had already made those kinds of findings?
Because the statute requires the court to make its own independent finding. And everybody agreed that that's what should happen.
Would that be required if a prior court had previously designated him an SVP in connection with another offense?
Can you ask that one more time?
Yes. Supposing a couple of years earlier he'd been convicted of another designated, one of the offenses that is listed as triggering an SVP determination, and a determination had been made that he was an SVP, would the statute require another round of SVP designation under those circumstances?
The statute requires that after conviction that the court make an SVP determination based on the facts of that case. So
what
yes, I mean practically.
Yeah, what would be the practical effect of an SVP under those circumstances? It wouldn't change the status at all, right?
As far as like registration, no, but in that case it would matter because the judge looks at for example, his relationship with the victim in each case to determine whether he's an SVP associated with that conviction. Practically, he would still have to register as an SVP on that first conviction. But say something happened with the first conviction, it was overturned or on a post-conviction motion, something, you know, the SVP would be tied to that conviction and not the later conviction. I'm just thinking.
Well, the risk assessment is tied into the current facts as well as other facts, right?
The risk assessment part, yes. The relationship part is specific to the present case.
That's what you're talking about.
I was responding also, trying to think of an example, and that was my example. But, and then also, just the very first, right, there's four things that have to happen for somebody to be an SVP, and that he'd be 18 or older, and then that the offense be a qualifying offense. And so you have to look at that offense. So in your example, if both are qualifying offenses, but it's tied to that current conviction.
So it's your understanding of the statute that there might be five or six SVP designations for a particular individual. Right?
There could be.
Well, so the other question that I had, and I don't mean to interrupt you. I know you want to say some other stuff, but if the DOC makes its own findings, its SV sexually violent predator findings, what effect does that have, well, like here, on the same case or a related case?
I think if, like here, the parole board found that Mr. Houston was an SVP. If the court made its own independent finding as required by statute that Mr. Houston was not an SVP, I think that the court's finding would arguably trump the parole board's
finding. So the court could make that finding?
The parole, or the court could make its own finding, yes, that Mr. Houston is not an SVP. And that's what I'm arguing should have happened here if he had interpreted the risk assessment correctly and the definitions, the relationship to net definitions as defined by this court properly. He should have found that Mr. Houston was not an SVP.
And so if, if we were to agree with you, he would still be an SVP though, right?
No, I think that the court's finding would trump the parole board's
finding. How could that happen? The defendant didn't appeal his SVP determination by the parole board. Do we have jurisdiction? Did the district court have jurisdiction to review the decision by the parole board?
The parole board's determination here is completely irrelevant to
Well, you just said this decision would trump the parole board decision.
The
so
parole
totally
board's
irrelevant.
Decision is completely irrelevant. The court order designating Mr. Houston an SVP or not an SVP would trump the parole board's finding. The court is required by statute.
So they are related. They're tied. You're saying that it would, the decision we make here, if we agree with you, would be effectively to overrule the parole board's decision.
Not overrule, no. The court did not.
Trump. All right, to use your phrase,
Trump. It would trump. I mean, a court order is going to designating Mr. Houston an SVP or not is going to override or trump. The court did not reconsider.
Where do you find that in the statute or the case law? What's your authority for that?
Because the statute requires the court, it says, the statute requires the court first to make its own independent finding. And it's only if the court doesn't do so that when the offender is released on parole, that for the purposes of parole and registration,
it says when considering release, so it wouldn't be after release. It would
right,
be
yeah,
when the board
when
is
when they're getting ready to release the offender.
Or to consider, then the board would refer that to DOC to do the risk assessment and findings.
Right.
Is that how it works?
Uh-huh. Yes.
And that's for purposes of the registration and community notification.
Mm-hmm. But the court or the court is still required on its own to determine whether the offender is an SVP.
Well, then let me ask you this. It's assuming the original hypothetical I asked you was two different court cases.
Right.
So in the second court cases, the court determines that the defendant is not an SVP. Does that trump the prior court's decision as well?
No, because that finding is tied to that case.
Well, so was the parole board's finding was tied to that case, not
no,
to this case.
No, it's the same case. This but, is the same.
That wasn't my understanding. My understanding was a conviction of a in connection with a different victim.
You are right. But when he is released on probation, well, he's released on parole. But when he's released, he's also at that time going to begin his probationary sentence for the case that we're talking about now. And so when he is doing both of those, he has to, they have to do the SVP determination. If he didn't have the SAOC and only had the contributing to a delinquency, they wouldn't have done an SVP determination because there would be no triggering offense. But the court in this case did not overrule or even consider the parole board's determination because the court was acting as the prosecutor and all the parties asked it to, pursuant to the statute, to make its own independent determination whether Mr. Houston was an SVP. There was
well,
no
the court did consider. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the court did consider it because it said, I'm endorsing the parole board's determination.
He mentioned it, that the parole board had found him an SVP.
And in fact, your client argued there that determination was invalid. So the court made a determination contrary to your client in that situation.
Nobody mentioned the parole board until that very last hearing. Up until then, there were several hearings about SVP. The prosecutor was going along, yes, you need to make an SVP determination. The court never did it. It was an oversight. Then at the very last hearing for the first time, the prosecutor says, oh, the parole board already made this finding. And that's when they start talking about the parole board and that, yes, the parole board had found him to be an SVP. But there was no talk of what the parole board had found, what the parole board considered. This is not a reconsideration of the parole board's finding at all. This is as the statute requires the court to make its own independent SVP determination.
Well, but didn't the parole board look back to the original, some original assessment that was done, a risk assessment?
The 2001 assessment, which is what everybody agrees that we should be looking at.
Okay.
And what the court is supposed to independently make findings about.
So if the court defers to what the parole board found, the court is in essence adopting those findings.
The court didn't defer to any findings. He didn't refer to any findings.
He endorsed them.
He just says the parole board found him to be an SVP. I agree.
Well, but okay, but is that not the same thing?
No. We don't know what those findings were. It's not an independent assessment. The court did not make any findings besides findings like it takes two to tango. and so I don't think that is what's required by statute. It's not a motion to reconsider. That's not what happened here, and that's not what we're appealing. And it's not what the prosecution was asking for all along, either. I would like to reserve my 3 minutes and 24 seconds for rebuttal.
All right, Ms. Hartman.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. Ken McReynolds, Colorado, bar number 40978, on behalf of the people.
Mr. Counselor, does it make any difference for purposes of an SVP determination, who makes the decision, either the parole board or the court?
It does not. And that's what a lot of the appeal here, the problems with it and why it's a little confusing, is because the defendant's fundamentally misunderstanding the statute. What the General Assembly did in 18.3414.5 was to charge two separate entities with the statutory authority to make the SVP determination. In Section 2, it's the trial court, or in Section 3, it's the parole board.
And Mr. McReynolds, doesn't the statutory scheme provide that if the parole board makes the determination, the trial court doesn't have to, or the trial court can't?
It does not specifically provide it, but it does indicate it's a conviction-specific statute. It's triggered by a defendant having been convicted of one of the triggering offenses, in this case, sexual assault on a child. And based on, once that has taken place, we look to have an assessment done, and then for the body that's reviewing it to make a determination based on that. Now, one of the points that defense counsel's raised here was that, well, for every single conviction, that there should be another sexually violent predator determination, and that one defendant could have multiple. That's not practically possible under the statute. Subsection 2, the section that deals with the trial court making the determination, provides that it should order a assessment to make that determination if one has not been completed within the 6 months prior to the new conviction, i.e. somebody who gets convicted and gets convicted again really quickly, if we have a very recent assessment to use, or if that person has been previously designated a sexually violent predator. There will be no further assessments once somebody is designated a sexually violent predator. That determination has been made. The options that a dissatisfied offender would have would be to appeal that determination. They cannot collaterally attack that determination, and they can't trump it somehow to get around the fact they did not directly appeal it.
So your position is that if we reverse here and vacate the district court's SVP designation, the parole board's designation would still remain in place?
There would be no reason for it not to remain in place. The parole board was statutorily mandated to make that determination. In 2006, when Mr. Houston was finishing his prison sentence and was going to be paroled, The section provides that the parole board shall make that determination based on a prior evaluation, if there is one in the file, and if there is not, to order the DOC to make that assessment so that they can make that determination. That's exactly what happened here.
Okay, now let me stop you.
Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt. Once the parole board makes that finding, we have the registration and community notification requirements within subsection 3. That's what sticks with that finding. That's what has to happen.
And that's the nature of the SVP finding, is that it is basically a gloss, if you will, to the sex offender registration, which everyone convicted of a sex offense, it's not part of their sentence. It's part of community protection. It's not a punishment.
Okay, now let me stop you again.
Right.
So let's say the court separately makes a finding, sexually violent predator. What are the requirements if the court makes that finding? It's the same, is it not?
It's the same. It's two independent bodies that can each make that determination. And there's now in the statute since 2008 in the amendments, a preference for the trial court to make that determination in first instance. If under the current version of the statute, not what was in effect in 2006 when the parole board ruled, but in the current version of the statute, if a person is convicted of one of the offenses that triggers the SVP determination, if the person is sent to DOC without having in the minimus indicating that determination has been made, DOC is to return the offender back to the trial court so that finding is made. That was added much later. That's from the 2008 amendments.
So that would apply up till the determination of parole eligibility?
That would be, once someone is designated an SVP, they are designated.
But let's say, as happened
right
here, no finding was made before right the defendant became parole eligible.
Right.
Then we don't go back to the trial court, we look only to the parole board.
Absolutely. There are two independent bodies that are each charged, mandated to make that determination.
So what if in this situation, we have, for one offense, this defendant is designated by the parole board as an SVP. Then for another offense, he is asked this, the district, he's now saying the district court erred in designating him an SVP for a variety of reasons. But my question is the district court have statutory authority, since there's already an SVP determination made by the parole board, to proceed to make another SVP determination?
No, it does not. And the way the statute's set up will prevent that from happening in practical terms, because if the offender commits a new crime that is one of the triggering offenses, no assessment will be done by the trial court, because the provision says order an assessment unless one's been done really recently, or unless the person has already been designated as a sexually violent predator. If someone has already been designated as a sexually violent predator, it's simply an enhancement to the already existing rule that
okay,
someone...
Okay, so let me stop you again.
Go ahead.
All right. I'm looking at subsection 2, the trial court section. Okay. Probation department shall, in coordination with the evaluator completing the mental health sex offense specific evaluation, complete the sexually violent predator risk assessment. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's assume that's done. The court looks at it and says, I don't buy it. The court could, I suppose,
yes,
make a finding that this defendant is not a sexually violent predator.
Absolutely.
Even though we've had a risk assessment.
Yes.
Now, what in that statute references the parole board?
In that section, it does not reference the parole board.
At all.
In that subsection.
The next subsection is providing the separate statutory authority for the parole board to make that determination.
Well, Mr. McReynolds, in that same statute, it says that the department shall, in coordination with the evaluator completing the mental health sex offense specific evaluation, complete the sexually violent predator risk assessment unless the defendant has been previously designated.
Yes.
A sexually violent predator.
Right. And that was the point I was trying to make, and perhaps I made it confusing, is that if there's already been a determination that this particular offender is a sexually violent predator, there will, in practical terms, not be a second determination ever made.
What is there to appeal?
What is there to appeal?
Yes. SPB determination has been made. It's not appealed from.
Yes.
The district court is later asked to make an SPB determination.
Yes.
Doesn't have authority to do so.
No.
Why are we here?
That's exactly why I'm asking this court to dismiss this appeal, because it had no jurisdiction for a collateral attack, which is what it was below. The argument was that defense filed a objection to being classified as a sexually violent predator. Defendant argued that the parole board's determination was incorrect, and the prosecution pointed out that we didn't need to have any determination made at all. At the September 20th, 2011 hearing at page 7, the prosecution said the court need not make an SVP finding. That was already done by the parole board. What the defendant is asking for is to overturn the decision. The defendant responded by saying the parole board SVP finding was not sufficient under the statute. The prosecution immediately pointed to subsection 3 saying the parole board did have statutory authority to make that determination. And after hearing these arguments, the trial court endorsed the decision by the parole board and found that to the extent I need to make a finding, yes, I agree, he is a sexually violent predator. There was no need for there to be any further finding by the trial court. But
you said, let me go back to 2, because if the court looks at an assessment, a court has discretion in its fact-finding to say, I disagree, I'm going to find he's not a sexually violent predator.
I wouldn't say discretion.
Well,
I would say that the court has to make its own factual findings as to whether each of the criteria have been found.
Okay.
The assessment is the primary source for that, and they will hear argument from each party about whether or not, well, they said this, but there's nothing to back it up, or it's incorrect. And that would be the time to do that, would be at that, when that determination is being made, either by the trial court or by the parole board. And if you disagree with the outcome of that, to appeal that determination.
But then the risk assessment itself is different than the finding.
Yes.
Okay.
Assessment versus determination.
This statute is referencing the assessment, not the finding. The finding of the trial court is independent of the assessment. So if a parole board made that finding, they're not referencing that in any way. The court has the authority to determine right here, right now, yes or no, to the question of whether the defendant is a sexually violent predator. I think the unless clause is referencing only another risk. We don't need to
We don't need to keep doing risk assessments if the person's been declared a sexually violent predator.
But the court could still say, well, you know, I'm hearing evidence from both sides. I don't think the parole board or the DOC had sufficient facts, whatever. I don't know. But theoretically, the court could say, I disagree and find no sexually violent predator.
I think that would be a really broad reading of the statute. I think that would be basically taking a statute that would make a lot of sense if we have, hey, if that determination hasn't been made when the person's in prison, then that determination's made.
Well, where does it say that? That's why you said it didn't reference 3. That's what it point me to the language, because I see this as only looking at, do we have to keep evaluating?
That was the point I was trying to make with the unless clause when I was discussing it, was to Judge Miller's point of, if the person's been convicted of multiple offenses, are we going to have, you know, multiple determinations made? There aren't going to be multiple determinations, because in practical terms, once he's been determined, no matter which of the two statutorily authorized bodies make that determination,
he still has to register.
He's going to have to register no matter what. He's going to be registering as an SVP, because that's all it does, is it adds additional criteria to the registration requirements. And in all practical terms, if he gets additional convictions, there will be no further findings made, because there will be no more assessment stuff. Without the assessment, there's not.
Well, why can't they just use the same assessment over and over again?
Well, if
that's what they tried to do in this case.
I'm sorry?
That's what they did in this case. He used the same assessment. Case,
and it was after he'd already been found a sexually violent predator. If he had not been found a sexually violent predator, then we would be keep doing assessments.
Here's my point. Why can't a court and maybe another court 5 years down the road keep using the same assessment that was done in 2002 over and over again? This doesn't prevent you from, does this language prevent a court or a parole board from using the same assessment over and over again?
It does not if the person has already been designated. If they shall order a new assessment done if the person has not been designated a sexually violent predator previously, or if there's not one that was done within 6 months prior to this newest conviction.
But it's practically a big so what. I'm sorry.
I know, go ahead.
Yeah.
I mean, it's practically a big so what, is it not? Right. If the board made this finding, he has to register. Doesn't matter what this court finds, he's still registered.
That's basically, once I saw sort of the reinvention of the claim in the reply brief that, well, I wasn't really challenging the SVP determination made by the parole board. It's not really seeking to reconsider, which that's precisely what was being argued below. That if you take that at face value, then this appeal is moot because the parole board's made the sexually violent predator determination. Nothing that the trial court or this court does here today would have any effect on that determination. It's in place. It cannot be collaterally attacked. It was not appealed, and the appeal should be dismissed.
So, I mean, isn't this get into the issue of do we read a statute as requiring a court to do a useless act? I mean, isn't that in effect what the defendants?
That's essentially what the defendant's asking for, is for us to have an additional finding by the trial court. I don't read it as being required. Section 2 doesn't require there to be multiple determinations based on the same conviction. And I see I'm out of time.
Thank you, Mr. McReynolds.
Thank you.
Ms. Hardman, you have 3 minutes and 20 seconds.
This is not useless, and this is not a big so what.
Let me walk that through, because that's if the parole board made this finding, right? He has to register. There has to be community notification, right? So irrespective of what the court finds, that still sticks under subsection 3 of the statute.
If the court found Mr. Houston to not be an SVP, he would not be an SVP for the purposes of this case. The parole board finds him an SVP for the purposes of when he's released on parole. But in front of the trial court, and here's what bothers me the most about this, in front of the trial court, Mr. Houston has a right to counsel, is represented by counsel, has someone to make these arguments for him. In front of the parole board, he does not have a right to counsel. He does not have someone to make all of these tricky legal arguments that come with the SVP statute for him. The parole board just looks at this assessment and determines, yeah, you're an SVP. It is important, it is crucial for the trial court to make its own independent finding, as is required by statute. If the trial court found him not to be an SVP, he would not be an SVP.
And where do you get that? I understand your point that, gee, it ought to, maybe as a right matter of fairness and justice, it ought to trump the parole board, but I don't see that anywhere in the statutory scheme.
Because the statute requires the court to make its own independent finding, and it's only if that doesn't happen, which is a rare case.
It happened here,
but I don't think it's common. Then the parole board, for the purposes when he's released, makes that determination.
So for one sexual assault, he can be an SVP. The trial court can't change that because it was never appealed. For a second sexual assault, voila, he's not a sexually violent predator.
Right. I mean, yeah, because each SVP determination is specific to the case. And here we are appealing the court's SVP determination. I want to correct one thing state said, the defense counsel never, defense counsel argued that it was the court's own independent obligation to make, or the court's obligation to make its own independent finding. She was not arguing about the parole board. And she says that's just for the purposes of parole. This is on page 8. But it's the court's obligation to make a finding of whether or not someone is an SVP. And I think that that's important to point out that she argued that. And it's important for each court in each case to make an SVP determination because it is offense specific. The court looks at what happened, what did the offender do in this case that made him an SVP. He's not an SVP in each case. And again, I just want to emphasize how important it is where when the parole board, when at the parole board, he does not have any representation. Thank you. We would ask that you, I forget what I'm asking for now, vacate the district court's order designating him an SVP and return it to the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hartman. Thank you again, Mr. McReynolds. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course.